In a polarized political age, we want to seek the good of our neighbors, engage in politics in a distinctly Christian way, and work together to be salt and light in our local communities, in our states, and in our nation. We invite you to join us at the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting in Indianapolis for a lunch conversation with Vice President Mike Pence and ERLC President Brent Leatherwood on Tuesday, June 11th. They'll discuss Vice President Pence's journey into politics, how pastors can partner with elected officials, and how we all can engage with hope in the public square. Space is limited, so register online today at erlc.com/events to reserve your seat for Serving in the Public Square, a conversation with Vice President Mike Pence and Brent Leatherwood.
You're listening to the ERLC podcast. All right, Brent, mute yourself, and I'll just do the intro.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Let's do this thing.
I'm so pumped. Let's go.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I've got a 5-mile run waiting for me after this.
All right. Let's do this.
As 2020 comes to a close, we're thankful for the role we've been able to play in your lives. We're thankful that we get to assist churches by helping them apply the gospel to moral and ethical questions of the Christian life and by speaking from our churches as a witness to the public square. This podcast is one of the many ways we do this. If you've benefited from the content shared on this podcast, would you please consider making a year-end donation? We're supported by the cooperative program of the Southern Baptist Convention, but any individual donations we receive, apart from that, goes to placing ultrasound machines in pro-life pregnancy centers and advocating for religious liberty and human dignity here at home and across the globe. Please consider making a year-end donation at erlc.com/donate.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the ERLC podcast, where every week we're talking about our work here at the ERLC and focusing on what Christians need to know about the things going on in the world. I'm Josh Wester, and with me on the podcast today, as always, are my co-host, Lindsay Nicolay.
Happy Thanksgiving week, everybody, otherwise known as Christmas decorating week.
How about it? And Brent Leatherwood is with us.
Merry Thanksgiving to everyone.
So this is exciting. It's a Thanksgiving episode. We're recording it earlier in the week. So if there are things that happen this week and you're like, how could you guys not talk about that? It's because it's Thanksgiving and we're spending time with our families. And we hope that you get the chance to do the same thing. I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of the modified Thanksgivings people are experiencing due to COVID and quarantine and all kinds of things. We also are going to be joined later in the show by a special guest, Amy Ford, who is the founder of Embrace Grace and has an incredible story, and we're really looking forward to that conversation. But Lindsay, now go ahead, take us into it.
Well, on ERLC.com, we have, of course, a host of content. We've got some policy-related things, some explainers, but what I wanted to highlight for this special Thanksgiving episode were a couple pieces that just focus on Advent, focusing our heart on the Lord, that focus on how to serve other people and focus on prayer. So the first one is by Stephen Gresovich. We have had him write several articles because he is an expert when it comes to mental health. And his article is titled, 5 Ways Churches Can Support Members' Mental Health During the Holidays. Because as we know, holidays are often hard for people, but even much more so when we're in the midst of a pandemic and there are restrictions and people have already been isolated. They are just feeling stretched and frustrated. And so Stephen offers just important counsel to churches and gives practical tips so that we as believers, we as churches can be there for our members and for our brothers and sisters and consider their needs in the midst of a busy holiday season. So just an example of a few things he says is to prepare to offer mental health support, especially during the 2 weeks after Christmas, because that is when reports of mental health struggles really go off the charts. He talks about seeking to maintain as many of our church's Christmas traditions as possible, but then making a way for people who are staying home to do that online and feel like they're a part. And then And then he mentions an important group, young adults and college students who are really struggling. And he counsels us to consider their unique emotional needs. And this is what he says. He says, there's never been a more important time for us as the church to share the hope of Christ with a fearful and uncertain world. And we're most effective in doing so when we care for and support one another. And so they're just small steps reaching out to people. But this truly is a time when we need to be putting others' interests above our own. We need the Lord's help to do that and reaching out to care for and support one another.
That's really good, Lindsay. And I love that in all these different fields or areas we're dealing with, you're able to reach out to these experts to give their kind of, you know, professional advice to us as we're trying to navigate all these different kinds of situations. And certainly the thing that you said that resonated with me the most at the end there was just that this is a time for us to approach this situation and maybe this difficult season as Christians, to think about what we as the people of God are uniquely shaped by the gospel in terms of our imitating Christ in the way that we see and treat other people. And so I think that that's really helpful. It's something that Christians should be thinking about a lot right now.
And in a season where mental health has been at the top of concerns for pastors and church leaders and just Christians who are trying to be good neighbors, this is a really helpful resource, because I imagine that as a lot of people are contemplating being isolated, not just for Thanksgiving, but maybe just for the entire kind of holiday season, it's going to be a challenge. And so we need these sorts of resources.
Who's tooting their horn in the background?
My train engineer son is doing his best train impersonation right now. Yeah.
I love that commitment though. You know, I love it.
I mean, God created him to be a train engineer. Now I'm going to try and use that and hopefully help him become someday like the head of CSX, but he may just be content driving a train his entire life. So
I love it.
Yes. Sorry about that.
Okay. We've had requests for articles dealing with particular struggles and particular people groups who are struggling in the midst of this pandemic, including mental health struggles, and then including elderly people and their struggles. And so just as a assurance to listeners, we are working on that. It's a constantly changing situation. There are no easy answers. And so I think people and experts are just trying to figure out how to best respond to these things. And so we are working on getting more of these topics covered and just finding the right people to talk about them. So our next article focuses on Advent, and I'm really excited. I didn't grow up celebrating Advent. From what I remember, I just remember the chocolate calendar, you know, when you opened it up and you ate the chocolates, and that was exciting. But I didn't really understand that it was about anticipating Jesus's coming and then his second return. So Jared Kennedy has an article for us titled, Why Advent is a Time to Build on Family Traditions, Recommended Resources for Preschoolers to Adults. And this article is great because truly there are so many resources when you scroll down to the bottom for groups of people, for preschoolers, for school-age children, and then for teens and adults. So if you're not sure what to do this Advent season, if you've never celebrated Advent, you don't even know where to start, check out Jared's article, because he will explain to you what it is. He will explain to you, you know, you don't have to do something special during Advent. It's not a requirement in order to be a Christian, but it is so helpful to quiet our hearts in the midst of the busyness of the Christmas season and to settle them on, to use a cliche, truly, the reason for the season, that we are eagerly awaiting the celebration of the first coming of our Savior, and we are eagerly awaiting and anticipating his second return when he comes and he makes all things new.
Mm, I love messages like that, Lindsay, during the Christmas season. One of the resources that I really appreciated Jared highlighting in this piece was our old friend Dan Darling's book, The Characters of Christmas, because I feel like that kind of book and that kind of resource really brings to life this season for Christians, and it helps just get our hearts kind of postured in the right way as the Christmastide begins.
It is funny that you mentioned that, because that's the book that I'm planning to go through. Hopefully I will have the discipline to actually completely go through it, because lots of times I have good intentions. But also, just to clarify for our listeners, Brent called Dan our old friend, and he's not old. You know, he's our longtime friend, but he's definitely not old.
Well, he's over 40, and so he's got a lot of wisdom. I think that's something he's pretty proud of, actually.
Listeners over 40 are going to be mad at you, Brent, for calling them old.
No, I called him wise, not old. He calls himself, I don't know.
you're digging yourself in deeper and deeper, Brett. Okay, well, let's get back on track here and talk about our last article, which is an article that focuses on prayer, and it's written by our colleague, Brooke Kramer. She talks about 6 ways that we can pray for our country during the pandemic, and I thought that was especially important during a season of Thanksgiving. We have so much to be thankful for, and even in the midst of a hard season, we have a lot that is on our hearts that we need to come before the Lord and pray about. And so she just gives us a guide. Of course, it's not exhaustive. There are plenty of other things that we can be praying for. But for example, she talks about praying for comfort for the brokenhearted and the elimination of COVID and a recovered economy and wisdom for civic leaders and endurance for pastors. So as we're gathering with our families or not gathering with our families, as we are getting ourselves into an Advent mindset, we need the Lord's help. And let's just remind one another to continually ask the Lord to work in the midst of this pandemic and these hard situations to show his glory and to provide for us.
So a little bit of movie magic here. I went to take a look at this article because I didn't remember seeing it. And I was going to try to like make sure I could engage with Lindsay on, oh yeah, Brooke said this awesome thing. But Lindsay has done that thing where she's gone into the future and is talking about an article that is as of yet, not yet published. So I'm sure Brooke wrote a great article. I look forward to reading it when it comes out. But for now, we'll just have to take Lindsay's word for it.
You know, I like having the power where I know what's coming out and y'all don't. So sometimes I have to throw a few things in there to where you can't actually comment on it because you don't quite know. Not really, but yes. So we are for prayer here at the ARLC. And so you will want to check these things out. By the time this episode airs, all these articles will be live. Again, we have a host of other things on our site as you are scrolling and browsing during the holiday season, during the Thanksgiving Day parade, or while you're watching football or whatever it is. And as always, just on this special Thanksgiving episode, we are thankful for you and thankful for the ability to be able to serve you through what's happening on ERLC.com.
Hey, thanks, Lindsay, for that rundown. And Brent, that takes us to the culture section. So tell us what's going on this Thanksgiving week.
All right. Thanks for that, Josh. No look at what is happening in culture would start off right if it didn't start with what we are thankful for on Thanksgiving week. So let's start off with some of those things, right? I feel like that's a good thing for us to banter about here for a few moments. Yes. Do I have an agreement from the crowd? Just speaking
into the
void.
I'm here for all the banter.
Okay, there we go. All right. So here are some things that I am thankful for while my son.
I was going to say, I'm thankful for your son making train noises behind you.
Well, I am thankful to be with family. So I am thankful for that. I'm also thankful for the fact that there are at least 3 vaccines, perhaps more on the way. For Americans who are wrestling with this pandemic and for folks across the globe who are doing the same. I'm thankful that we have clarity about the U.S. presidential election. That was something Josh had, I think, rightfully mentioned before the election that he was praying for. I'm thankful that the stock market hit 30,000 points this week. That's really an unbelievable number, really an amazing accomplishment. We'll talk about that here in a bit later. So those are some things I'm thankful for. What are y'all thankful for, Lindsay and Josh?
Well, I'm fortunate to be back in North Carolina, as Darius Rucker called it, the land of the pine. And looking forward to spending a really wonderful Thanksgiving in a really modified format, missing some family members and not gathering with the huge whole family gathering that we normally do. But still, looking forward to spending time with my parents and my sister and even getting to see my grandparents while I'm here. This is going to be a really different but still a very special Thanksgiving. And honestly, in the midst of all of this, I'm really grateful to still have the opportunity to be with all of them. So that's one major thing that I'm thankful for.
I'm thankful, as Josh said too, to be able to be with some family members. I'm thankful for family members thus far being kept safe from COVID. I'm thankful for friends who have had family members who have recovered, even though they've come really close to the brink of death in the midst of COVID. I'm thankful for a little baby boy who has yet to have a name, who's going to be born in January, but maybe December, who knows? And I'm thankful for just continued extended time with my husband and daughter while we work at home and live out this pandemic. I do think I will be able to look back on this as some sweet, unique times, even though they can be exhausting as well.
I also am thankful for similar things as y'all, but I'm very thankful for the two of you, Josh, for getting this new version of the RLC podcast up and running way back, well, pre-pandemic. I'm thankful for Lindsay, the wonderful commentary you provide each week. I'm really thankful for Gary Lancaster, who actually makes all this happen in terms of all the audio. And he actually makes us sound like we know what we're talking about. Megan Smith, who helps put together and coordinate all of the stuff that it takes to kind of run the trains on time for this podcast. Marie Delph, who gets our show notes up online. I mean, there's so many great folks that just make this little part of the RLC go. I'm just so thankful for the entire team.
Gosh, Brent, all the feels.
All the feels. Also, our spouses and parents who help watch our little ones so we can record a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, McCafferty has silently been in the car with me as we've been trying to record the podcast. Remember the rain episode? It's been a fun ride for almost a year now. It was right after Thanksgiving last year that we started planning this thing and launched it shortly into after the first of the year. So yeah, Brent, thanks for bringing all that up. It is special, and I'm grateful for all of the people who work so hard to make this podcast a thing.
All right. Well, let's get to some real news and culture this week. Okay, so on the COVID front, as families gather in person or online, COVID cases are soaring. For the first time since the coronavirus outbreak hit the United States, the country has added more than 1 million cases in each of the past two consecutive weeks. That is a mind-blowing number. COVID deaths, which lag reported cases by weeks, are also at a level not seen since this past spring. In the past week, the United States added on average about 173,000 new daily cases. If this growth pattern holds, the number of cases reported for the full month of November is likely to hit 4.5 million. That would be more than double the number of any previous month. This is all reported by the New York Times. That's just, it's amazing to just step back and see where we are as we are heading into Thanksgiving. But there was one interesting news item that I saw on the coronavirus front. Around the world, canines are being trained to detect the whiff of COVID-19 infections. Dog trainers are claiming extraordinary results. In some cases, they say that dogs can detect the virus with almost perfect accuracy. Scientists involved with the effort suggest that canines could help to control the pandemic because they can screen hundreds of people an hour in busy places such as airports or sports stadiums and are cheaper to run than conventional testing methods. This was all a part of a report in Nature. And y'all, I just think it's going to be the perfect ending to 2020 that dogs are part of the solution for saving mankind.
Yeah, I just think it's great that we've been a consistently pro dog podcast this whole time. And this is it's pretty insane. You know, you think about the fact that dogs, they use them to sniff out drugs. But in this case, talking about sniffing out a virus, it's pretty surreal.
No, what would be consistent with 2020 is if it was cats who were going to save mankind. That would be consistent with the end of 2020.
But didn't we learn in the early days that cats are actually responsible for helping to spread the virus?
Well, see, I guess they can get it. I don't know. But see,
these are
the
diametrically
COVID,
opposed. I mean, this is really good narrative here.
But a dog
Dogs
did get
are part
COVID.
Of the solution. Cats are evil.
No, we did talk about dogs getting it as well at one point, I think.
It was one dog.
I question
the findings. I want a recap.
Oh, man. But, you know, one thing I am curious about, maybe we'll have to provide the answer at a later date, is now that this pandemic has continued, we're having this third wave. A lot of people that I know who don't think it's a big deal still compare it to the flu and still kind of say it's the same as the flu. The numbers are the same. So I'd really like to know at this point in the pandemic how that compares to the flu. So can you get your culture content guru on that for maybe next week, Brent?
I mean, let me pause real quick and see if we can
answer
that.
Are you going to do real-time answer, huh?
Well, I mean, you kind of left us there with really maybe important.
Well, I said we could address it next week.
All right, well, let's just see right here. Honestly, it's been this kind of misconception that's been with us since the beginning of this public health crisis. So just, you know, kind of quickly doing some research about it, I found a news source out of Utah that was talking about the number of national cases for both. So nationwide, flu and pneumonia killed over 59,000 people in 2018, which was the last year, I guess, of records available. The national death rate from COVID-19 right now is four times that number. In fact, the 257,000 deaths across the U.S. have now exceeded the combined total nationwide of flu deaths over the past 6 years. So, needless to say, you can get flu, and there's a really good chance you're not going to be hospitalized, and there's an even better chance it won't take your life. That's not necessarily the case with COVID, particularly if you are in some of those really vulnerable populations, such as elderly or immunocompromised. And so that's why we want to do everything we can to be responsible and wise to not spread this virus inadvertently or otherwise. Does that help you, Lindsay Nicolay?
That does, Brent Leatherwood. Thank you for that helpful information.
That's right. Well, look, there's actually, I mean, what you asked is not abnormal at all. There's a lot of disinformation out there. There's a lot of false information out there. And this week, CBS News is reporting that YouTube has suspended the One America News Network channel for repeated violations of the video platform's policy on sharing COVID-19 misinformation, YouTube confirmed on Tuesday. The channel has also been demonetized as a result of the suspension, YouTube added. So basically what occurred here was OANN has posted several videos saying that there is a cure for the virus that YouTube has flagged as being false. And apparently they have refused to take it down. And so YouTube has said your account will be suspended, which means they will not be able to upload new videos for a week. We're probably going to see more stuff like this as the pandemic moves on.
That's definitely right, Brent. And honestly, it's surprising that we haven't seen more of this already. We do know that there is so much bad information that's floating around out there. And that's one of the reasons that you see, especially like social media sites, for good or for ill, doing so much work to try to slap labels on things and to let people know if the information that they're looking at has been verified or if it is generally agreed upon by other sources. And so it is important, especially during this time, both as we're coming out of this, you know, really contested election and as we are still in the midst of trying to combat what you called a global health crisis. Good information is important. And so I can understand YouTube's decision here. And it also is, you know, for people who don't know, when it says that they've been demonetized, like that's a huge blow to any organization or creator on a platform like YouTube, because that means that they're not allowed to receive or generate any revenues through running ads. And so this is something that will probably, it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Okay, now turning to the transition in the White House and sticking with CBS News. They are reporting that now that the General Services Administration has determined President-elect Joe Biden may access the transition tools of the federal government, formal conversations between Mr. Biden's team and the Trump administration officials are already underway, the incoming president said on Tuesday. President-elect Biden said that there's been, quote, immediate outreach from national security officials, adding that he can now access the daily briefings and his team is working out a meeting with the White House's coronavirus task force on vaccine distribution. He went on to say, quote, and I must say the outreach has been sincere. So to catch folks up, in the middle of this week, after a few states, in particular Michigan, certified their election results from November's presidential election, the General Services Administration, which is the agency within the federal government that essentially it just kind of fires the starting gun for the formal transition to begin, the head of that agency signed a letter signifying that the transition could officially start. And what that really means is about $6.5 million immediately becomes accessible to President-elect Biden's team in order to formally begin the process of coordination in terms of document transfer and things of that nature for each of the federal departments and agencies around the country. So it's a big development. It's a reassuring development, because that's one of the hallmarks of our republic, is the peaceful transfer of power between administrations. And so this was a good week.
I'm looking for words that aren't, that's exactly right, Brent, but that is exactly right, Brent. In this case, talking about the peaceful transfer of power, that is something that is so fundamental to American democracy. And we talk all the time about the idea of a social compact, like the fact that we are all, what makes our democracy and our republic work is the fact that we have all agreed that there are certain norms that we're going to abide by. And it's not just that these things are law or that this is written down somewhere as a process to follow, but it's something that we all believe in. It's something that we all agree to. And so, you know, in our country, we have elections. We aim to make them free and fair. They have a result and a winner, and the winner takes over. The art of seeing power transferred peacefully is something that is fundamentally American, and it's really, really important that that tradition is preserved.
Well, so as the transition is now formally underway, President-elect Joe Biden has named his Secretary of State. So we talked about last week, I believe, him bringing aboard a few advisors, and in particular naming his new Chief of Staff, Ron Klain. This week, he led out with one of the highest profile members of the cabinet that you can, Secretary of State. President-elect Joe Biden will name as his Secretary of State his longtime advisor, Anthony Blinken, reports Axios, who has held diplomatic and national security jobs since the Clinton administration, a Biden advisor confirmed to the outlet on Sunday. So he did release Blinken's name as a Secretary of State, and he followed that up with other members of his national security team. He's naming longtime advisor Jake Sullivan to be national security advisor, Avril Haines to be his director of national intelligence. The Secretary of the Homeland Security Department will be Alejandro Mayorkas. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations will be Linda Thomas-Greenfield, and the special presidential envoy on climate will be former Secretary of State John Kerry. So these are, you know, really interesting names. Some, I think, are familiar to listeners and political observers. A number of these folks are going to be new names, maybe particularly to our audience, not speaking to the politics of any one of these individuals, the political preferences of them. You can tell, though, the through line in these for these selections is that Biden is putting together a seasoned team of leaders for his different agencies and departments. That is clearly something he is going for. So we should get additional announcements in the coming days. I mentioned this earlier, the Dow Jones Industrial Average hitting 30,000 points. That's a mind-blowing number. CNBC is reporting that for the first time, it went above this number amid positive vaccine news, hope for a strong economic recovery in 2021, and the easing of political uncertainty as the Trump administration approved the start of the presidential transition. So that's what I was saying before. It really was a big development this week that the General Services Administration did formally begin the transition process. And the stock market rallied because of that. So this is good news for all of us.
It is good news, and it's an answer to one of those prayers that Brooke Kramer, our colleague, mentioned in the article that I brought up previously, and we are very thankful for it.
All right, turning our attention briefly to the international front. So this was actually a pretty bombshell, pretty big bombshell that came out. According to Axios, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu traveled in secret this last Sunday to the city of Neom in Saudi Arabia's Red Sea coast for a meeting with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Israeli sources told the outlet. This is honestly really amazing. I mean, it sounds like Israel and Saudi Arabia have actually been talking behind the scenes, working together for the stability of the region. And if some formal agreement could come out of this, it would just be an amazing development in the Middle East. And further down in the article that we'll link to, some of the speculation revolves around the two of these countries being united in their efforts to contain Iran, which is a destabilizing force, not just in the world with its sponsorship of terrorism, but particularly in the Middle East.
You know, this is one of the legacies of the Trump administration that flies under the radar, the progress that has been made in terms of relationships with countries in the Middle East and achieving historic peace deals and aiming to bring about, like you said, Brent, that kind of stability to a region that, you know, for all of us, we grew up always uncertain about the way, the state of things in the Middle East. And so to see even this meeting and the potential for this kind of progress is really encouraging and very heartening.
All right. And next, heading over to the South Pacific. So the Solomon Islands are set to ban Facebook, according to a news outlet there. The government there has defended its decision to place a temporary ban on Facebook, a move it says is aimed at tackling cyberbullying and online defamation. Quote, cyberbullying on Facebook is widespread. People have been defamed by users who use fake names, and people's reputations that have been built up over the years are destroyed in a matter of minutes, said the prime minister. I bring this up only because it feels like, you know, a continual part of the news that we watch and culture that we watch and the things that we discuss, even with our family, revolves around how much social media seems to be a, you know, kind of toxic thing in all of our lives. And I just thought this was interesting because here you've got a national government that is thinking about actually banning Facebook in the country. That seems a bit heavy-handed, but I mean, it's just interesting that this is showing up in other cultures as a kind of a destabilizing element. So that's why I brought it up. I'm not sure that something like that would fly here in America, but I don't know. What do y'all think about that?
Honestly, as a person who is deeply committed to civil liberties, I think that it is unsettling to think about a country banning something like Facebook, which is, you know, this platform where people can freely communicate and, you know, exchange ideas and relate to one another. But at the same time, I think it was about 2 years ago. I wish I could remember where I read it, but there was a long form article that was talking about the power of Facebook, the way that it's able to be, especially by bad faith actors, to be manipulated to not just in terms of the sniping and dissension that goes on, but literally to manipulate people in by floating conspiracy theories, by trying to rally extremists or create radicalism that has actually resulted in you know, hundreds of people in different parts of the world losing their lives. So it's not surprising to me that there are countries considering something like this, because it is a real complexity to try to balance a civil liberty like freedom of expression and the opportunity to just network and use whatever platform that you would choose, and at the same time trying to protect the integrity, stability, and safety of your country. That absolutely makes sense to me.
Yeah, this is definitely something that is going to sound odd to American ears that a government would continue this. I would say that this is something that our colleague Jason Thacker, in particular, has been working on. He's doing a lot of research in this area about what are helpful steps that these digital platforms can take to continue being places where free speech is respected and it is actually encouraged, but at the same time cut down on these troubling number of fake actors or folks who are utilizing the platforms to do, well, dangerous things.
I also think it's important for me, like I need to probably, in my household, ban Facebook every once in a while. So Jason, who you mentioned, Brent, talks a lot about just taking personal responsibility as well, that these changes start with us as individuals. So taking stock of how we're using these platforms, what kind of trust we're putting in them. He tells us to read news, you know, not get them from the social media networks, but get it from other sources. And he has tried to cut down on that himself. So I think we need personal responsibility, you know, not just the government telling us, don't do this, don't do that, but we need to take personal inventory and find out what kind of damaging habits we have going on in our lives.
Right. And this conversation, it reminds me of the old adage, the best way to combat bad speech is more speech. And so that's probably something that folks at Facebook, and it says in this article that they're reaching out to the government in the Solomon Islands to figure out a way forward here. So it'll be interesting to watch if this is something that is actually followed through with. All right, moving over to SBC Life, Baptist Press reported this week that our own Dr. Moore received a prestigious Religious Freedom Award. As a matter of fact, the Religious Freedom Institute presented Russell Moore with the 2020 Defender of Religious Freedom Award during a virtual ceremony that occurred last Saturday. The Religious Freedom Institute announced he was the recipient of this year's award back in September. And Josh, who presented Dr. Moore with the award?
Hey, Brent, thanks for that setup. So Dr. Moore was presented the award by Dr. Robert George, who is a professor at Princeton University. He is one of my personal heroes. And when it comes to religious liberty and what it means to be a Christian who takes seriously the implications of our faith for our life in the world, Dr. George and Dr. Moore are two of the most inspirational and leading thinkers on this subject. And so it was a big deal. You can actually watch the presentation of the award online. We'll link to it in the show notes. But it's noteworthy. We had Dr. Moore on the podcast last week, and we all work with him and know him personally. But the work that he has done, that God has used him throughout his life to do, to advance the cause of religious freedom and to stand up for rights of conscience for all people, is truly remarkable. I think this is an award that was well-deserved, and I was really excited to see him recognized in this way.
Yeah, we love the folks at RFI. They do great work, and it was a great honor. I know that Dr. Moore said that to accept that award. So we're obviously really proud of him, and we're proud to support the work he does by living out the mission of the ERLC. All right, moving on to some miscellaneous items. College basketball is back. So some of the first few NCAA games were played this week. We're really thankful for that, as college football, a number of games are now being canceled, and COVID actually came
with quite a bit of drama, actually.
Yes.
Not just canceled, but incredible intrigue going on there.
That's right. And but not all college basketball teams fared as well as others. My own beloved Tennessee Volunteers basketball team, basically the entire program, had to stop, both the men's and women's basketball teams, because of a COVID outbreak there. As a matter of fact, the head coach of the University of Tennessee men's basketball team, Rick Barnes, he tested positive for COVID-19 this week. So they're not actually going to be able to play their first game until December 12th. Oh, no. So hopefully college basketball can avoid a disastrous start. But
I hope your Vols fare better in basketball than they did in football.
Yeah, well, they basically stopped playing football at this point, Lindsay. So thank you for reminding me of that. Hey, speaking of football, just before we went on the air here, we found out the news that Alabama football coach Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID-19. And this time it appears to be legit, as unfortunately he is exhibiting mild symptoms. So well wishes.
I was going to say, I don't want to be crass or insensitive, but it's for real this time?
Yeah, it is for real this time. It's what it seems like. That probably is beneficial for the Auburn Tigers, who Alabama is playing this week in the annual Iron Bowl. But we do hope that Coach Saban gets well. And so, yeah. All right, last note. So, Lindsay, when you think of North Carolina and the food that North Carolina is known for, what comes to your mind?
Maybe vinegar barbecue sauce. Is that right?
Okay. All right. Barbecue. And then if you think about like Thanksgiving in North Carolina, what would be a side dish that you would think of?
Well,
would be?
Yeah. I never think about Thanksgiving in North Carolina, but since I'm being asked to think about it, I would guess something like mac and cheese.
That's probably a good one. I would think sweet potatoes, right? I mean, that's
sweet potatoes.
That would be my number one choice. Well, according to Google research that came out in an article this week, apparently the number one searched side item for Thanksgiving this year is rice. Rice. Josh, what is wrong with your people?
Look, man, I follow the Google Trends account on Twitter. I think that a lot of the stuff they put out is helpful. And maybe for the first time on this podcast, I'm going to say, I think this is fake news, Brent. I got to tell you, I've spent a lot of Thanksgivings in North Carolina. And, you know, rice is a staple of those meals, but it is far from the highlight of those meals. So you mentioned sweet potatoes. We also eat chicken pastry. We do eat vinegar-based barbecue, which is like just the Lord's work. And so, you know, it's a Thanksgiving in North Carolina is great, but this whole rice thing, I think it is a charade.
What is chicken pastry?
See, chicken pastry is a delicacy. It's kind of like dumplings, except it's better than that. So if you've never had it, maybe next year for Thanksgiving, you guys could skip your plans and just come to North Carolina. We'll host you and do it upright.
Some chicken pastry. Well, I saw on the Today Show, they did this bracket challenge, Thanksgiving sides bracket challenge. They did it for Halloween candy. I think maybe Snickers or Reese's peanut butter cups one. But for this, out of all of the side dishes, stuffing won. And listen, I like the stuffing that my family has, but stuffing would not be my first choice in a bracket challenge.
Also, okay, the stuffing versus dressing argument is the real thing.
Well,
that
it's dressing
we need to get to here.
First of all.
It's not dressing.
Yeah.
It's dressing. If it's cornbread, it's nasty.
Well, so anyways, Meredith asked me, she's like, hey, so what all do you want us to kind of prepare for Thanksgiving? The very first thing I led with was dressing. So I think I just think subconsciously that's where I go to. But then I also said stuff about sweet potatoes, which incidentally, according to the same Google Trends account, sweet potato casserole is the number one search side item for Tennessee, which that's on brand for us Tennesseans. Way down in Florida, Lindsay, your homeland, they put cornbread So,
well, we will have cornbread,
but what's going on there?
Yeah, we will not have cornbread dressing because that is gross, but we will have cornbread.
Well, apparently in South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas, the number one searched side item was, in fact, cornbread dressing. So maybe you need to steer clear of those states for your Thanksgiving. But needless to say, I'm pretty proud.
Or maybe I will just, maybe I'll just be the change I want to be, Brent. I want to see. Be the change I want to see. That's what it is.
You are the people you've been waiting for. Exactly. Well, I just got to say, I'm really proud of my fellow Tennesseans for what they are searching for this Thanksgiving. Lindsay, I think your people, they did a fine job down in Florida with their cornbread. Please don't put any sugar on the cornbread. That's actually not cornbread.
Honey goes on the cornbread.
Yes, I'm talking about the actual preparation of the cornbread. But Josh, your people, rice, mercy, son. I'm just really disappointed with the folks in the Old North State.
It's thoroughly embarrassing. And it feels, you know, it's pretty devastating. But I will say, just to North Carolina's credit, a few weeks ago, there was another one of those maps floating around of everyone's fast food restaurant, our favorite fast food restaurant in every state. And Tennessee maybe had the worst option on the menu, which was Long John Silver's. In North Carolina, we proudly repped Bojangles. And if you've ever had Bojangles chicken, you need to check it out. It is the true and better Popeyes.
Well, listen, Tennesseans, we're known for our seafood.
Long John Silver's.
All right. Well, listen, I hope everyone has a happy Thanksgiving. That is your look at This Week in Culture.
This episode of the ERLC podcast was sponsored by The Good Book Company, publisher of A Better Than Anything Christmas by Barbara Rioch. These daily Advent devotionals will help families get more excited about Jesus at Christmas than anything else. Find out more about this book at thegoodbook.com.
So now we're about to talk to Amy Ford. Amy is the president of Embrace Grace, which is a nonprofit that was formed for the purpose of providing curriculum and leadership to support churches nationwide to open their arms to young women with unplanned pregnancy. She's also the author of Help Her Be Brave, which is her newest book that is about the empowering Christians to be involved in the pro-life movement. And I got to tell you, Amy is just an incredible person with some really remarkable stories, and we are really looking forward to this conversation. Well, Amy, thanks so much for joining us. We're excited to have you on the podcast today. As we're getting started, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you're serving in ministry right now? And as you're answering that, would you tell us one thing that God is teaching you in this season of life and ministry?
Yeah, well, my name's Amy Ford, and I have a ministry called Embrace Grace. And we help women with unexpected pregnancies get connected to churches. So we have support groups in churches all over the nation for these women with unplanned pregnancies. And we want the church to be a safe place for them to go to, a refuge. A lot of times when a girl's pregnant, it's the last place she wants to go to. And so we want to change that. And so we have these 12-week classes that are in, we're in over 700 churches, 47 states and 10 countries that have Embrace Grace support groups. And it's been fun to do. And what God's teaching me right now, you know, as we're recording this, it's definitely still a COVID experience. And it's been definitely hard to have support groups for these moms when having to do things, trying to stay safe and everything. So it's hard for these moms to be vulnerable through Zoom sessions and things like that. But God's just been showing us so many creative ways of how to love on the moms, and that they're really, crisis brings clarity. And for our organization, it's been neat to see all of the changes and that we've made that we never would have done unless something like this would have happened. So even though it's kind of a mess, there's been miracles in the mess. And so it's been awesome.
I love that phrase, crisis brings clarity. It's so true and brings innovation. And your ministry sounds just incredible, so needed. And we're so very thankful for it, and that the Lord has raised you up to start this ministry and to see it blossom like this. So this podcast focuses on cultural issues. Is there anything in particular that you're paying attention to right now?
Yeah, for sure. You know, with Amy Comey Barrett just onto the Supreme Court. You know, we don't know what the future holds, but if there ever could be a time where a possibility that Roe v. Wade was overturned and abortion became illegal, we really want to make sure that the church is ready for that. Like, what does it look like if abortion became illegal and women didn't have access to an abortion and now they're having to carry their baby to term and not having resources that they need? Or I just would hope that the church would fully be able to help practically, spiritually, and emotionally when she's in that situation. We can't just vote a certain way and then say, good luck, hope it works out for you. Like, we have to be the hands and feet of Jesus in the situation, whether it gets overturned or not. We need to make abortion unthinkable. And the church can do that because we have all the resources. There's over 300,000 churches in America. And if we all were, had Embrace Grace support groups or partnering with our pregnancy centers and really making a difference in our community, we can help reduce the amount of abortions out there because we have so much resources and love to give through His people.
Amy, that's so good and such a vital task to call the church to prepare for a time when abortion would be illegal because of the potential of having Roe versus Wade overturned. You are personally very vulnerable in sharing your own story about an unplanned pregnancy and the hardship that can come along with that and the decision to choose life. Is there something that you would say that you wish Christians had done to help you when you were in your own time of need?
Yeah, for sure. I think that I ended up getting married. I had an unplanned pregnancy, ended up getting married when I was 16 weeks pregnant, and the pastor wouldn't marry us. He said that we had sinned and he couldn't bless the marriage. And we just felt so much shame even on our wedding day. And then we tried going back to church and it was like the elephant in the room. People don't know whether to say congratulations or I'm sorry. And so they just don't say anything at all. And then you feel alone in a crowd of people. And I wish that I had felt like I had someone to talk to, or that the church would even just talk to me about what I was going through. And I didn't feel comfortable to go to them, especially with the pastor not marrying us. But one thing that's really cool is that a couple years later, that pastor that wouldn't marry us, he called my husband out of the blue and he asked for forgiveness. He said that he felt like it was his worst mistake in pastoring history. And will you please forgive me? And of course, my husband was like, yes. And they're really good friends to this day. And even so, I had a son and he's amazing. He's 22 now and he just graduated from Oral Roberts University and majored in theology and has a heart for the Lord. And when he was 16, that pastor that wouldn't marry us asked us to come speak at his church and about pro-love and everything that we do. And so I did. And then afterwards, he asked me and my son to go on the platform in front of everyone. And he said, Amy, years ago, I asked your husband for forgiveness, but I never really asked you. Will you forgive me for what I did 16 years before? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I forgave you a long time ago. Well, then he looked at my son, 16, in front of the whole church. And he said, Jess, I am so sorry for planting seeds of rejection in your heart before you were ever even born. And while you were in your mother's womb, I rejected you. Will you forgive me? And my son, 16, in front of the whole church says, I forgive you. And it was such a powerful moment in that room. And I think that if we can have more churches like that, just being, you know, we all make mistakes, but we can together make a difference. We can help each other up when we fall. We don't kick each other when we're down. And to know and empower a single mom to say, we can help you be brave, that we're in this with you, and we're going to walk alongside you, not only through your pregnancy, but through your whole life, if you'll allow it, because we're a spiritual family. So let's do life together.
That's an amazing story and such an encouragement. And that pastor, even in telling, in you sharing that brief story, I know that that will give courage to some people who have messed up and need to ask forgiveness as well. Like in the Bible, like it says, neglecting the weightier matters of the law. You know, I think of Job's friends who we, as Christians, we try to get it so right theologically, we end up building hedges around things, and then we don't love people well and serve them and bring them to the feet of Jesus. So I'm so thankful for that pastor and for your family and for that incredible testimony. Your newest book, Help Her Be Brave, is a resource that will help equip and empower the church to engage in this pro-life movement, as you've talked about, through practical pro-love action. So if somebody asked you today how they could get involved, what kind of tips would you give them?
Well, you know, we always say pro-life is a stance and pro-love is an action. And so action is where the change happens and where transformation happens, because it's God's kindness that leads us to repentance. And so it's love that changes people. So, I mean, I would say, first of all, grab the book, because Help Her Be Brave is full of ideas of how you can get involved in the movement. I remember when I was in my 30s, I didn't even know there was a pro-life movement. I thought it was people that stand outside abortion clinics and yell. Like, I didn't know, and not the good kind, you know, and I didn't know that there was like a movement. And once I got involved, there's so many resources that are out there, so many cool organizations, boots on the ground that are really making a difference. And I would just ask you, like, what makes you pound your fist on the table and say, someone needs to do something about this and that, and just follow your heart in that way. Like, there's, God has stirred your heart to action in that. Or maybe it's connected to your story or something you've been through. Maybe you've experienced an abortion in your past and you want to be the person that you wish you had years ago in your life when you made your abortion decision. Or maybe it is, you know, maybe someone you know had an unexpected pregnancy and that you wish that you want to walk alongside her and be like a mentor or help her maybe practically with things like if she needs a GED or if she needs help with childcare or just whatever it may be. I wish that there was a plus B equals C, and that means a baby is saved. You know, I wish there was like a cookie cutter way to help save a baby and empower a mom, but it's very Holy Spirit led. It's very unique to every situation. And so it involves relationship and getting involved. And I hear so many churches say, oh, we don't have pregnant people in our church, but most likely you do, because the abortion rate is exactly the same inside the church it is outside. But also just look at it as an outreach. Like, go partner with your pregnancy centers and tell them you want their clients to feel welcome to come to your church. And starting Embrace Grace Group is a great way to start too, the support group, so that they know and they have a place to come to. But there's so many ways to get involved. And if you want ideas, definitely grab the book, Help Her Be Brave.
Amy, I've got to tell you, we interview people every week for this podcast, and the things that you've shared already have just absolutely blown me away. And it makes me, as someone who's like spent time working in various aspects of the pro-life movement and spent a lot of time just in local like pregnancy centers, I'm even more encouraged. I bet a lot of our listeners are going to be too. They know, you know, that pro-life work is hard, but it's incredibly rewarding. Could you share just some of the ways that you've seen God work through the pro-life movement and as you describe it as being pro-love?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, oh my gosh, there's so many stories. One of my favorites is there was one time I went to Sonic, and you know, at Sonic you can't tip unless you have a cash. Like if you use your credit card, they don't give you a tip line. So we've had Embrace Grace girls work at Sonic and they've complained about no tipping. So I thought I had cash, and I had all my kids in the car, and I go and order some slushies for everyone, and then I realize I don't have any cash. So I paid with a credit card, and when the girl came out to the car, I said, I am so sorry, I don't have any cash for a tip, but I'll run to the bank and an ATM machine, and I'll come back and bring you some. And she was like, no, you don't have to do that, but if you want to, you can. And I giggled. I was like, yes, I will go get you some. So I go to the bank and come back. And when she came back, I was like, hey, what's your name? And she said, my name's Zoe. And I said, oh my goodness, I love that name. My littlest baby is one and his name is Judah. But before I knew he was a boy, I'd pick Zoe as my girl name. Did you know that your name means life, but like the heavenly realm of life, like the John 10:10 life. It's like such a cool name. I said, did you know that? And she's like, no, but so you have a baby? And I was like, yeah, I mean, he's kind of a bigger baby, but yeah. And she said, well, I just found out I'm pregnant and I'm really nervous, and me and my boyfriend don't know what to do. Do you have any advice for me? And I was like, God, you are so cool. It was like the perfect setup. And so we got her connected to a pregnancy center. She got connected to an Embrace Grace group. She ended up having a little boy. I was at her wedding. I was at her birth. She ended up getting married, and her husband is just in our new Embrace Legacy men's curriculum because he has fallen in love with the Lord. I get to do life with this girl that's so amazing. And, you know, God is bringing us people all the time. Like, everywhere we go is our mission field. And sometimes we get too much in a hurry to even notice, you know, the people standing right in front of us that are praying and asking God, for help. And a lot of times we are the answer to their prayers, but we have to stop for the one and just start a conversation. And you never know. I've met pregnant girls at hotels. I stayed at a hotel a couple weeks ago because some of my family members had COVID. And so my key wouldn't work randomly one day. So I go to the front desk and the front desk girl is pregnant. Started a conversation with her. She's 19, nervous about what's going to happen. We got her connected to an Embrace Grace group. Like, there are women everywhere. We just have to notice and ask God to put our Holy Spirit goggles on and see these people the way He sees them and help get them to all the amazing resources that are out there.
Amy, wow, is really all I can say. This is one of the most compelling interviews that we've done on our podcast because it is so evident that God is blessing your work because it's work that is so near and dear to Him. The vulnerable children and mothers and fathers and families. And it's just so encouraging to hear your stories of how the Lord is at work and how we can join Him there. So I do pray that God would continue to bless your ministry all around the world and that the Lord would use this conversation and your book to bring many into the fold of His kingdom and into the fold of ministries like Embrace Grace and Pregnancy Resource Centers. So thank you so much for allowing the Lord to use your story to testify how He brings, as you said, miracles out of messes.
Yes, thank you guys so much.
So now it's time for the lunchroom, where every week we tell you about the things that we've been talking about with one another. And since it's Thanksgiving, we're going to try to make it good. Lindsay, you're up first. Tell us what's on your mind.
So the first thing that I'm sharing today, I'm kind of breaking the number one rule of sharing something like a book, being as I have not engaged with it or read it, but I know it's going to be good because number one, it was recommended by somebody trusted. Number two, it was written by George Guthrie, who's a Bible teacher. Number three, it's a chronological Bible. So if you're like me, if you don't have a structure or a plan, now I'm not talking about like structure with your multiple different colored pencils and highlighters and things like that. If that's the way that you work, that is great, but that's not the way I work. But I sometimes need structure. I oftentimes use the YouVersion app, Bible app, that will give you a plan that you can follow in reading your Bible. It's on my phone, obviously, so I'm not writing things down. So this day-to-day chronological Bible that I saw a friend share has some readings by George Guthrie that goes along with what you are reading for the day, has some devotions that are part of it, some explanation. It's just in a pretty layout. You can have your pen right there with you and mark and highlight. So I'm really thinking about asking for this for Christmas so that in the new year, I can have a little bit of help and accountability in going through a Bible plan. The other thing is going to go in the same vein as last week when I said I was going to try to do some life hacks with Lindsay. I was trying to figure out what to share. And what I'm sharing maybe sounds girly. Josh and Brent, you might be bored, but they're called e-cloths. So have y'all ever heard of Norwex? Have your wives gone to Norwex parties?
I don't want to cop to this, but yes.
No.
No? Okay. Well, you know, it's like a more... Norwex. There are these like antibacterial or microbial or something rags. So you don't have to use as many cleaning products. You don't have to use as many paper towels.
No, we use Clorox.
Clorox. Yeah, well, this is Norwex. Wipes. Okay. And so these e-cloths are much cheaper than Norwex. Apparently work in the same way.
Wait. E-cloths? Like,
yes, they're called
electronic,
e-cloths.
Like email?
Nope. Environmental. Yeah. I actually have really enjoyed them. I'm not anti-paper towel because I love paper towels. I'm not anti-cleaning products, but I have really enjoyed using these. They're much cheaper than Norwex. You don't have to talk to anybody that sells Norwex, even though if you do sell it, that's great. I just don't always do well with the sales part of it. And they work much better than paper towels, actually. So you can use them on your kids' hands and face. You can use them on the countertop. I've used them on the kitchen countertops, and we haven't gotten salmonella poisoning yet or E. coli or anything like that. So it's been pretty effective. But I'm just saying, you should buy some, try them out. You just use water and then you wash them in the washing machine on hot.
And so people get together and have parties
yes,
with these?
For Norwex, not for Eclos, just for Norwex.
Is Norwex the brand?
Norwex is the brand of the cleaning cloths and the cleaning system.
The Eclos.
Which many people enjoy. It's just, I don't have the Norwex kind of a budget. So I'm going with the cheaper chicken, in the words of George Banks.
Okay. And are people still doing this in the midst of a pandemic, getting together to change cloths?
I don't think so, but I don't okay. know.
Well, that's a very interesting lunchroom resource.
You had more questions than I thought you would, Brent.
I got to tell you, if we were all back in the normal times when we did gather around our lunchroom, that probably would have been the thing that would have cleared out the room. I feel like everybody said, you know what, I got some emails to go do. I've got
well, it clear. Josh is clearly not
nails to go clip.
No, it would anything. Not have. It would not have. The girls would have been intrigued. The guys, and I know that's a generalize, but it just is what it is, probably would have checked out.
I feel like you just told us about the ShamWow. I mean, I'm just...
Listen, I'm just trying to help your budgets. If your wives buy Norwex, switch to Eclos, and you'll be able to go out to a nice dinner because you'll have some extra leftover
okay.
money.
All right. So you're telling me Norwex is not the company that produces the Eclos?
Norwex.
No, Norwex.
It's not Norwex. You sound like my mom who calls Starbucks instead of Starbucks and Kroger's instead of Kroger.
No, I was Kroger's. Literally thinking it was Norwax. I thought
no,
that's how
Norwex, Norwex. They are the rivals.
I was off
of
by
Eclos.
One letter. I was one off by one letter, and you're accusing me of talking from somebody like from South Boston.
This lunchroom is going
talking
on
about
forever.
The Facebook over here. All right.
Who's next?
So, Brent, before the lunchroom gets cleared out, tell us what's on your mind.
All right. So, my lunchroom is this new documentary that's come out from CBS News, and it's about the disturbing appeal of the QAnon conspiracy theory. So, it goes into detail about kind of the background of the conspiracy theory, you know, which essentially it's false. But I thought there was one little kind of nugget in there from a professor who specializes in the study of conspiracy theories. And he said, quote, "A conspiracy theory is implicitly trying to address grievance, suffering, and pain that people are feeling, and they feel that they are being neglected by the mainstream. I think anytime you have a popular conspiracy theory, the question you should be asking is, what is going on in our country that makes anything like this appealing? What is wrong?" And I thought that was good. I mean, for us as Christians who are supposed to care for our neighbors, I really thought that this was a good question that we should be asking ourselves. Why is something like this? You know, why do I have family members who seem to be kind of taken by this? Why do I have folks that I know who seem to really be like adherents to this and are spreading it? And at the end of this piece about the documentary, it actually leads you with what I thought was a helpful place. Like, if you want to help someone who might be, you know, under the you know, kind of influence of this conspiracy theory or others, don't be combative with them. Instead, be really empathetic and just try and understand where they're coming from and then kind of ease them out that way. I thought that was really helpful because a lot of times you get these sorts of reports and it doesn't leave you with like, how to do anything, how to be constructive. It just leaves you kind of frustrated that this is in our culture. And so I would commend this to our audience, particularly because some of us may be gathering with family or friends who might be thinking that the QAnon conspiracy theory is something real.
Now, I think that's really good, Brent. I mean, it is interesting. Like, look, there is evil in the world. We live in a fallen and broken world. And so there's evil on small scale. There's evil on a large scale. But when it comes to things like conspiracy theories, the truth is that inevitably, you know, the vast majority of these theories end up being false. And the thing that I tell people like that I'm close to who are taken in, who tend to be taken in by these things is just to remind them that, hey, if there is any truth to this situation or to this, the thing you're looking at, you're probably not going to be the one that finds it. So maybe don't waste your time with it. Don't let it dominate your life as you are, you know, just live your life. And they're just like this world has fallen and evil exists on a small scale, a large scale, it's also really hard for fallen people to keep secrets. And so
as the Brits say, truth will out. The truth comes out eventually. And so maybe just rest easy and don't get taken in by conspiracies. But I will definitely try to check out that documentary. And for my own lunchroom this week, switching gears entirely away from conspiracy theories and pyramid schemes and other things, what's been on my mind lately has been the fact that I spent about a year working with one of our colleagues, Jen Kintner, and I want to like really give all of the praise to her for this, but we had an article published recently. It was called Sameness and Distinction, Rethinking Assumptions About God's Design of Men and Women, and we've spent over a year in conversation about gender roles, about complications in terms of men and women relating to each other and thinking through what the Bible says and trying to apply what the Bible says about gender and sexuality to the home, the church, and the world. And so we wrote this article. It's what I've been thinking about a lot because it took us, you know, it took us a year to come up with these ideas and to get it published. And so we've put a link there in the show notes. But also, if you follow that link, you can read all of the articles in this latest edition of Icon Magazine, which is about, you know, biblical anthropology. It's about God's design for humanity and what it means to be male and female. And there are a number of really great items in that journal. There is an article by Patrick Schreiner, who we've had on the podcast recently, that was really, really excellent. There's an interview with Robert George, and there's even an article from Oliver O'Donovan, who is one of the premier Christian ethicists living today. And so anyway, you can follow that link and get access to all of that stuff. It's all free, and it is certainly something that I would commend to you.
I know that is a great article that I look forward to reading. You will not escape the lunchroom, though, without being chided for sharing your own stuff. So this must be Josh's version of a humble brag. He got by with doing it by highlighting Jen instead of himself.
Yeah, the audience may not quite have caught that right after he went through there just extolling how great Jen is, which totally agree with that. She is great. He slid in there, we got published. This is your piece. You don't get credit. You don't get credit for turning in your own work.
Yeah. And this is exactly what would happen in the real lunchroom were we meeting in person.
Man, it is. I feel like we're all back together again. As Brent shared earlier, we're grateful for each other and for the fact that we get to do this podcast together. But Lindsay, we're especially grateful for you because if you weren't here, this conversation may bore anyone who dared to listen out of their mind. So thanks for being there. Well, that's going to do it for our show today in this special Thanksgiving episode. We want to say, as we're reflecting in the spirit of Thanksgiving, thank you so much for listening to the show every week and for sharing your feedback and thoughts with us. If you like the show and want to help us out, you can share this episode on social media or go in your podcast app and leave us a rating or a brief review. But for Brent and Lindsay and myself, we want to say happy Thanksgiving, and we look forward to being back next week with you with more content.